Welcome back to the Daily Drum. On WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141, this is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Since the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol this week, frank conversations with friends and colleagues are expected. But talking to your children about it isn't as easy. As a matter of fact, depending on their ages, it may give many of us pause. News of the attack is everywhere, and it's hard for children not to see. So how do you talk to them about it? And what have you told them? Well, tonight, we have help for parents who may be struggling with this issue. My guests are Christina Wren, a fourth grade teacher in the Prince George's County School System, and Gianni Clarkson, a D.C. middle school teacher, nationally ranked historian, and Ford's Theater Oratory Fellow. Lines are open. I want to hear from parents tonight. What have you said to your children about the attack on the Capitol? Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Gianni, Christina, thank you both for joining the conversation. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Really appreciate you.
Absolutely. Let me start with you, Christina, because you have three children.
And, yes, I do.
And they are at various stages in your life. What are your children's ages?
I have a 13-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 9-year-old.
Okay. Watch out for the 13-year-old. It's about to get rough. I just wanted to give a little levity to that because it's really been a tough week for all of us. So before you give us your professional opinion, what have you said to your children about it? And have you had to craft the conversation differently with each of them?
Yeah, that's exactly what I've had to do. We have a very open family in terms of conversation and how they're exposed to the news. It's always on in the house. So with my children, it's more of an open conversation where they know if they see something or they ingest something and they feel some way about it, then they can ask about it. And then our nighttime routine always includes some type of debriefing of emotions or if they have any questions about what's going on. But the youngest is the feeler. So usually her conversations are more emotion-centered, while the 13-year-old is still very logic and fact-based in what it is that she's questioning about.
So what has the youngest child said?
Yeah, it's been hard for her to see the violence in the news that's going on. So we've actually eliminated the video intake of the current events, and she's more looking now into newspaper articles and photos, because for young children, the effect of that video information coming in is an image they can't get out of their head. So it's often easier for her to ingest via photo or through words in an article for her to be able to take in that information.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the oldest, kind of logic-based, I told you, those 13-year-olds. what has the oldest said?
You know, she has already formed her own political opinion. So
really?
Usually our conversations tend to be a little bit more militant and aggressive than the youngest one. So she's always coming with opinions and questioning motives of different individuals. So she's very much so beyond her years.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we haven't discussed the middle child, and I don't want to have that middle child complex go on here. So what has the middle child said?
You know, with being my only boy, he's the consoler and he keeps the middle ground. So although he can relate to the youngest feelings, he usually brings them all back to solid space where they can kind of talk about it. But their variance in ages and their different opinions and the way that they take things in really leads for like a rich dinner conversation, if you could imagine them sitting around. So they all, you're right, they all ingest differently. They all have different viewpoints about what's going on in the world. And it's great that they feel, and we have that house where they feel comfortable talking about those things.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about talking to our children about the attack on the U.S. Capitol this week. What are they saying to you, the parent? What are you, the parent, saying to them? Would like to hear from some parents tonight about any hesitancy you may have had to talk to your children about this unseeable event. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So Gianni, you also have a teenager, right?
That's correct, who turned 16 on Wednesday. Wednesday.
So how,
and that was a very interesting birthday for
him. Having that to happen on a birthday. So what kind of conversation did you have with your child about that?
It was uncomfortable, and then it became comfortable.
What do you mean by that?
I guess what I mean by that is that my son is 16 and growing up as a black boy inside of this area. He is fully aware and cognizant of race, his relationship with the police, the current climate of this world. And for this to happen, it was just yet another reminder about the protection of complexion that certain Americans have compared to what his life is going to be like as a black boy. So I told him, you know, if it helps any, your father shares the birthday of March 3rd, which is the same exact day that lives in infamy about what happened with Rodney King. And I told him, I was like, take this as a call to arms about what are you going to do to help make the world better? What is your call to arms inside of fighting for civil rights and fighting for those that are disenfranchised? So my conversation with my son was more so about, unfortunately, this is an America that you live in, but this isn't the America that it always has to be. I don't want you to inherit this. Make it better. And I know he can.
You are a historian as well as a teacher. Does this conversation make it easier for you? Or because you are a historian and are well aware of America's difficult history and obviously, what we saw on Wednesday was a reinforcement of some of that difficult history. Did it make the conversation harder for you?
It did, because I wanted to fall into teacher mode and to teach through this. But I realized that, and this is just a word of advice that I think that all parents could use, is let your child guide the conversation. This isn't a moment where you need to talk at your child about what they saw. More so, have them tell you, well, what did you see? And then from then on, you get to hear about how are they processing this information. In turn, what are their friends saying about it? And then from then on, you can put yourself in the conversation and talk about it. And that's what our conversation was on Wednesday, as we sat and we talked on the phone and we, you know, because he was clearly in school and I didn't want to interrupt him. And then when we sat face to face, and it was intense. It was a very intense conversation, but I wanted to be very honest with him. I said, you know what you saw. What you saw was an act of terrorism. And he said, I know what terrorism is because my father's a history teacher. And I said, let's be very clear here. There's a difference between protesting and blatant terrorism. And he said, yes, I understand that. And I think that helps students and children to understand what does fairness look like and why Wednesday was such a day that will live in such great infamy.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about difficult conversations with our children in the wake of the attack on the U.S. Capitol earlier this week. If you have a question, if you have a comment, what did you tell your children? Are you struggling with a conversation about this with your children? I'd like to hear from you again. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Nina, calling from Prince George's County. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm calling in regards to the fact that for Ms. Wren, she's a teacher at our school at Capitol Heights Elementary. I serve as a principal there. And one of the things I want to comment about is the number of comments that were placed in social media from parents from all over who often felt that this was not a moment to bring up in our schools. And what we felt that it was a moment because this is not was not politics for so much, but also really centered on history. And as teachers and educators and administrators, we have to share with our students what actually is happening in our world. Because through social media, they see this. Through their friend talk, they see this. And this is a moment where we cannot play ignorant or blind towards occurring in our country. So it is a time to share out in a manner to open a forum where our kids can discuss and share their feelings openly. And I just want to give a huge shout out to Ms. Wren for bringing that forum to our classroom discussion on Wednesday, which was so impact our students and their families in a way that a curriculum would never have done.
Let me ask you this, Nina, because you're at Capitol Heights Elementary School, familiar certainly with the community, mostly black and brown children. And how did the youngest children react to the optics of the black and white optics that we saw here when you're talking about the Black Lives Matter protests that we've seen over the past year compared to this? Was that something that they brought up? Was it something that teachers and parents brought up? How was that handled?
You know, our students are very savvy, I would say, and they know the difference in what took place on Wednesday versus what took place in the summer months. And there is a conversation that they have in terms of why and not understanding how this nation could allow or the people could allow this to occur where others are looked at differently. You know, one thing I just want to add about this is that when we're talking about curriculums in our school, they oftentimes do not focus on the what is. There is an undercurrent sense that everything's okay and how we have worked in this atmosphere of peace and positivity. However, we are we shouldn't be complacent in the fact that of not giving our students the truth. And so for them to feel how they feel and to share how they feel is valid. And we have to address that. And I wish more of our curriculum writers, those who develop curriculums, would place this as a part of instruction and not leave it out for students to know.
Okay. Nina, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Christina, I do want to drill down a little bit more on that question that I asked Nina, whether you can talk about the children in school or your own children. Talk to me about what the children have said about the black-white optics of what we saw on Wednesday. What specifically did you hear them say?
You know, I think it's a great question, and I think that's such a sensitive topic that I have to mention that you need to have the family and the school culture that allows students to feel comfortable in expressing topics like that. And luckily at my school and inside my classroom, we have that. And that was one of their first points of contention. Leading a student-led conversation, they immediately are asking me, well, why aren't they being shot? Why aren't they being detained? If they're destroying things, why are they not taking immediate action while during the Black Lives Matter protests, we
Absolutely.
Were being tear gassed and rubber bullets and everything else? And this is something that they definitely are questioning. And so you have to create that culture that where they feel comfortable asking those type of questions because they definitely have them.
And what was the answer?
You know, the answer for that, I know inside of my classroom, not inside of my home, but inside of my classroom, I lead fact-based conversations. So unless it's a fact, I do not allow myself to answer it. Now, I know the reason. I definitely know that the difference in complexion, or I feel as though the difference in complexion was a difference in the response. But inside the classroom, I think it's okay to leave those questions unanswered, but validate their feelings and their questions about it. Now, inside of my home, my children will get my answer and they will get their opinion because it's family-based. But in school, I think it's completely okay to say, I understand your sentiments. I validate your feelings. I have those same questions, but I don't have the answer to them. And then divert them to their parents because oftentimes the conversations that we have inside of our home may start outside and our conversations my students had on Thursday started from a conversation we had in class on Thursday.
It is a really difficult issue to tackle for a lot of parents, and we're going to drill down a little bit more in just a bit. We're going to take a break. Jerry from Virginia, we're going to talk to you. Don't hang up. Marshall, calling from Temple Hills, we're going to talk to you as well, so please stay on the line. And the line is still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Certainly, you can reach me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment via podcast on WHUR.com after 8:30, or you can download the new Quiet Storm app on your smartphone, and you can hear the program live the entire hour. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We continue this discussion on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We have help tonight for parents who may be struggling with talking to their children about the attack on the U.S. Capitol this week. My guests are Christina Wren, a fourth grade teacher in the Prince George's County School System, and Gianni Clarkson, a D.C. middle school teacher, nationally ranked historian, and Ford's Theater Oratory Fellow. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or follow me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Again, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jerry calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Now, unfortunately, I have a special needs child. My son, he's 7. He's nonverbal, so I'm not able to really talk to him about stuff like this here. But I wanted to interject that people don't realize a lot of this is learned at school, and unfortunately, when parents don't start early in terms of history, I was mentioning to one of your guests, you have the Sisters of the Confederacy out west. They're the ones that advocated back in the day for all those Confederate statues and whatnot in buildings, but they also advocated for curriculum in schools. And people need to understand, when you do go to a public school, it's just that, it's public, but someone has already decided what they want you to learn, and they start interjecting their views. You know, you have a lot of people, they're awoke, but they're sleepwalking. They want to be able to say, I didn't know, or, you know, that wasn't me. This happened back then. But
let me just say, Jerry, this isn't about back then. This is about Wednesday. And so I think certainly one of the points that Christina made is that, you know, there is a two-pronged position that she as a parent and a teacher has to hold. And so I think it was very wise of her being responsible, allowing the students to talk this out. But as a parent, she has her own teaching responsibilities to her family. And so I think that it is, you're right, it is a difficult row to hoe. But I think that there is a historical part to this, but the context has to also be discussed as a parent, because this history is 2 days old. But thank you very much. I appreciate your input. I want to go to Marshall, calling from Temple Hills. Marshall, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay. Yes, when I saw it, I was very disheartened. I was in tears.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a native Washingtonian. I lived through the Civil Rights Movement. I watched the cover wagons, the farmers come from Alabama, Montgomery, march through my neighborhood to go to the Capitol to protest the unfitness that they was getting in the 60s. As black farmers, we could never, ever get that close to the Capitol. It disheartened me because that is our natural symbol. Regardless of all the hardship that I've been as a race been through, my grandson was scared. I live in Temple Hills, Maryland.
How old is your grandson?
He was 8 years old.
He's eight. Okay, go ahead.
And he was in the basement looking at TV, and he said, "Grandma, they're shooting at the Capitol." And when I, because I work, I'm working, I'm teleworking. When I was in tears, I was crying, and I didn't want to cry because I had to compose myself for him. But he said, "That's awful, Grandma." I said, "Yes, that is awful. I lived through the Civil Rights Movement in the District of Columbia. I went through the riots. I saw the National Guard."
So let me ask you, Marshall, if I can, what did you tell him?
Hello?
What did you tell him?
I told him, go to school, get your education. I got my bachelor's. I graduated from Cheney State University in 1980. I got enough. You got enough left here to get your degree, get your master's, get your doctorate. Dad, go get your education. So you, this is what you're going to be up against. You're going to have to use the pen and the paper and the command of the English language. Those are cowards. Those with guns and weapons, they get satisfied for a minute. But you will be satisfied for a lifetime if you get the command of the English language and get your education as a young black man.
Preach!
Nice.
Preach!
A gun is a coward for one moment. After he fired that gun, he's a coward. But then he's going to be scared because he's going to get caught and go to jail.
Okay. Marshall, HBCU.
I want my grandson, and I got a son. He served in the Navy, and I'm appalled because you go to other countries to defend other countries with what this one man did. That was a coup d'etat.
Yeah.
And you talk about apartheid, we got apartheid right here in the United States.
Well, Marshall, thank you so much. I appreciate your input. I really, really do. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gianni, your thoughts about what Marshall was just sharing with us.
Perfect. It's absolutely perfect. In every sense of the word, and the same sentiments that I echo to my son and to my students. So 2 years ago, I had won an award for civics and excellence teaching. It was really great. We got a tour of the Capitol, and everything was great. We, of course, you go in a visitor center, but as we were leaving the Capitol, the bus wound up going on the backside of the Capitol, the same side of the Capitol that was breached on Wednesday. So I realized of all the great things I had done as a teacher that day that I had not gotten a picture with my students. So we ran up by the stairs, close enough to the gate, but not too close, and got a tourist to take one of our pictures. And sure enough, just as right as rain, officers came out of nowhere, guns drawn on me and my students. And here I am in a suit, my kids are in uniform, and I'm yelling at them, "What are y'all doing?" And I sat there. And, of course, my kids are now seniors, and some of them are in their first year of college because they were high school students that I brought. And they said, "Are you watching this, Mr. Clark?" And they're texting me, emailing me, and I'm going, "Yeah." And, of course, my immediate question is, where was that energy on Wednesday? Where is that energy that my students experienced, my A and B students and children of color experienced for these people who are committing treason at the highest level? Where was that energy? And those are the conversations that you have to have with your child. Those are the conversations that you need to have with your students. I think that the biggest mistake that we can make in a moment like this is run away from this conversation. Because trust me, if we run away, then they're going to get misinformation on this day. And that's the least we need. That's the last thing we need. We don't need misinformation.
Are you concerned, Gianni, about how to position the conversation with children who are emotional about it? I have a daughter. She's, she's an adult. She's a young adult. And she also she majored in history here at Howard. And so in talking to her, even as a parent, this week, we spoke about it from an historical perspective. And so I didn't, and even though she was emotional about it, again, she's a young adult. And so she could look at it historically and say, well, this is the way it was, this is the way it is. And she was looking at it historically and saying, hey, nothing has changed. But for really young children who are emotional about this kind of thing, is it wrong to just give them the history without dealing with the emotion? Or do you just deal with the emotion? And I'm talking about as a parent, not as an educator.
Right.
You know, how do you bridge that?
I think you can't have one without the other. I think that politics and conversations and moments like this are tied together. I think what has to always be the through line or the soundtrack of conversations like this is honesty. So Melinda Greenberg talks often about how to navigate difficult conversations with students, and it's something called calm anxiety. And I know this sounds like an oxymoron, but it does make sense that if you model being calm in front of your child or your student while they're expressing emotion, they will now understand that expressing emotion is natural and it's okay. Yes, if your child is emotional about it, I had students that are emotional about it. My son took on some emotions about it. If I tell him, oh, that's okay, or there's nothing to cry about, no. That's unfair to his emotion. Allow people to emote through this moment. That was a very tragic thing that we saw. And I think that too many times we want to go around things instead of working through things. And this is a moment where we have to hold our students' hands and hold our children's hand and walk them through this. It's okay. And we will be okay because children are resilient and Black people in this country have been nothing but resilient.
Christine,
and I definitely have to agree with Gianni. I'm sorry. I definitely have to agree with Gianni is that young children, especially in our elementary years, should be getting the foundation of learning to think through emotion. It's perfectly natural to feel, but when you can't let your emotions stop your processing and the ability to logically think through things, and it's okay to be upset and it's okay to be angry, as long as that anger and that sadness doesn't take over your thought processes where it stiffens you and it stops you. So having conversations with young children is critical because these are the skills we want them to have as adults. And if they don't hone them as children, however will they get them?
So,
Christine, I agree.
That, on its face, from teachers and educators who are living in the D.C. metro, where we see this happening. And yet, and this is for you, Christina, it's one thing to watch this as it happens, but then, you know, the next day, how do you, as a teacher, deal with difficult opinions that are seeded in children from parents who may be racist?
That's such a great question. And, you know, where I am demographically for, it's mostly Black and brown, but we have had some redistricting and it has allowed us to have children of different races. And so at the beginning, it's very interesting because children are who their parents make them to be. You know,
right.
The nature versus nurture is going to be what it is. But I will say that in a school environment, children love that escape from the household. It's when they can become themselves. So having these conversations in a classroom with children that may have grown up in a racist household, thankfully we haven't had any of that at my school, but that may have grown up in a racist household or may have unpopular opinions, giving them the opportunity to have these discussions in schools gives them an opportunity to form their own opinions because they get the opinions of their teachers, their peers. And so if you don't have these conversations and you have children growing up in these, you know, households where these unfavorable households, we don't give them a chance to form their own opinions if they're only being allowed to think inside of the home.
I like that term, unfavorable households. I like that term.
That's a really, I'm going to write that one down.
You need to write that one down. Yes.
I like that one.
Yeah, because Gianni, if a child in the wake of this comes to school virtually or otherwise, however that is done right now, I think that it is incumbent upon teachers to, whoops, did we lose somebody? I think we did.
No.
Yeah, it may be incumbent upon, you know, teachers who are well-versed in the history of this country to inform a child when they come to a forum like a classroom with incorrect information.
Absolutely. So I live in two. So two things that I did. I'm a huge fan of a website when teaching students about facts in regards to a moment in history. And it's a website called AllSides, ALLSIDES.com, AllSides, because you get to see what, from a point of view, what are people for that are left, what people are right, and what people are in the middle saying about a various topic. So therefore, scholars, students, children are able to form their own opinion and see where the truth honestly does lie. I think that's very important. Inside of this moment of history, I want students, I lived in trying to teach a teachable moment about ethics, and I used John Adams as a case study. And I used John Adams as a case study because when John Adams was leaving the White House, and he had, was very disappointed because he was going to be the country's first one-term president. He tried to manipulate the media. He damaged foreign relationships. He had a horrible relationship with senators and representatives. Harold, stop me if you've heard this before. He said and wrote on the desk, "May none but noble and wise men sit here." And that was very important because John Adams had a reflecting moment. And we have a current commander-in-chief that won't reflect on the mistakes that he's made. And now I had the ability to talk to kids about, why do you think self-reflection is so important? So there's tons of teachable moments inside of this history that you can use. And I think that's important.
So let me ask you about that, because that brings me to my next question. Mm-hmm. For children who are watching every moment of this, who are thoughtful and observant, Wednesday at noon, the president said, go to the Capitol. And then we saw what mm-hmm. happened. And then by 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, the president tweeted out a video that praised the people who attacked the Capitol. And he said that, you know, I love you, but let us not be violent. And then yesterday, the president issued yet another statement decrying violence and saying that the perpetrators of violence will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. All of those things happening within a 48-hour period. Aside from the head-snapping contradictions of all of this, how do you explain that to children? Do you say, I don't know, how do you explain that to children?
I mean, for me, I'm going to sit in a teachable moment of, now you understand why civic duty is so important, why mm-hmm. voting is so important. You know, because immediately what happens is when students see this current commander in chief, and I can't believe I'm actually still calling him that.
But he is.
Inauguration Day. But he is. And Inauguration Day can't come soon enough.
So hold on. He is, that's a fact. Whether Inauguration Day can come soon enough depends
absolutely.
On your position. And so you have a fact. He is.
Mm-hmm.
But can Inauguration Day come soon enough? That's an opinion.
Correct.
So which goes
correct.
Back to what I'm saying before. How do you explain that to children?
So when I guide the conversation, I ask them, well, what do you think? Tell me, what do you think about everything that's happened? And you'll hear, because of the community, my school community, we have tons of unfavorable opinions of the job that he's doing. And then I asked them the question, well, how do you think he got here? And, you know, students will come up with various opinions. I say, well, no. He got here because of a democratic process. He received the most votes. He received the most electoral votes, and that's how he got here. So now what happens is it now empowers students to say, well, when I become 18 and I become of age, I'm going to register to vote because I'm understanding how important voting is. So that's a learnable, teachable lesson inside of this, that you can talk about civic responsibility and really have students think about, who do you want your leaders to look like? Not necessarily physically, but morally. What do you want their moral compass to be? And what are things that are important to you inside of your local neighborhood and, of course, to your family as well?
So, Christina, in addition to serving up your children's favorite meal Wednesday or Thursday, what kind of conversation were you serving up at the dinner table about this?
Jeff, first, always starting with emotions, because to be honest, I don't want to guide my children into a discussion that they may not be. I need to get a feel of the room is what I'm trying to say. So first, always starting, well, how do you feel today? And if I get an outlier of a response or something extremely drastic, then I know where my conversation goes next. But the dinner table on a Thursday, especially because it was a virtual dinner table, because my children are actually, they spent holidays with family abroad.
Ooh.
And so, exactly. So having them digest that away from me and then only being able to discuss it at the dinner table, you know, for an hour and a half, they've already form their opinions because they've completely taken that all in without me. And that often happens for children. They take something in and you're not there to immediately address it. So that conversation was just extremely reassuring. And to piggyback off of what Gianni said, it's like you want to get them involved in the civic process so that they don't feel like they're hopeless in all of this, as if our president just magically appeared out of nowhere. And so the reason he has a lot of power is because we do not have control, and I won't even go into the political side of it, but knowing that they can shape and they can limit the control that even our president can have if they voted in our local elections, in our state elections, and getting them involved in that now. And what my eldest mentioned, that she was ready to start a petition when she goes back to school, and she listed all of the things that she wanted to write our representative about because she didn't like the way that he or she was voting on certain topics and things like that. So that conversation at my table jumped from anger and upset to, okay, let's get an action plan because I can't sit still in this moment.
Yeah, that, I mean, because I can, first of all, you said, so all of your children are spending time with family abroad right now?
Yes.
Oh, God, would you like to adopt another child? I want to go somewhere. I'm good. I'm available.
Me too. Let me refresh my passport.
Yeah, how about that? That's, I'm going to find out what's happening over there in the Wren family. But, you know, all jokes aside, that had to make things, and I'm glad you shared that point, because getting the feel of the room is exponentially more difficult when they aren't sitting literally in front of you at the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you have to put, you know, some extra, you know, black mom magic into that conversation to make sure that your children are emotionally whole in discussing this?
Yeah, and you know, and a lot of us are parenting, whether it be from abroad or not, we're all mm-hmm. maybe parenting virtually, whether we have, you know, co-parenting situations
right.
or travel or whatever the case may be. Do not let that limit the ability that you have to communicate with your children, because, you know, with three different ages and three different temperaments, a conversation that I had with my middle child over FaceTime was enough. However, my youngest needed, you know, she's a texter. She needed to get her words out on paper because she's really emotional. And so, you know, that virtual aspect of it might actually heighten the ability for your child to communicate with you, because let's be honest, parents are scary people. You know, you raise them, you love them, but, you know, you also reprimand them. So when it comes time to having difficult conversations, sometimes not being face-to-face or having them write it to you or text it to you or whatever medium they want to use might actually heighten the communication that you have with your child around the subject.
Gianni, what would you suggest that parents not do right now?
I suggest that parents, the worst thing that you do as a parent is to not talk about it.
Because I agree.
Now you're letting everybody else dictate your child's opinion on what they should feel about it. Because believe it or not, a lot of my students learned a lot about what was happening on TikTok, of all things. And I'm very familiar with TikTok, but I never thought about it as a news source like that. But when scholars are looking at videos and everything else, they're taking in information. And if they don't have anyone there to navigate or to bounce something off the wall with them, then you never know what you're doing. And you'll say, well, what made you guys get to that opinion? Well, I did. Well, that would be your fault because you decided to run away from that conversation. This is not a time to run away from that conversation at all. No matter how small your child is or how old or immature you think your child is.
And I think the point that you're making about specifically TikTok and more broadly social media just today, literally about 90 minutes ago, Twitter permanently suspended President Trump's Twitter account, and mm-hmm. he really is the first president to use specifically Twitter to an advantage that is unparalleled. Certainly,
yes.
President Obama used social media and Twitter, but not like this president. And for
Absolutely.
Twitter to shut his account down. I mean, Facebook shut his account down yesterday, but he was not big on Facebook or Instagram as he was with Twitter. He would be really considered the Twitter president. And so I think that, to your point, it is important for parents to understand how their children are getting this information, the videos, commentary, because that commentary, you know, Christina, Lord knows, children get a lot of that unfiltered information and disinformation and misinformation, and that a lot of that stuff is well ahead of parents.
Right, and especially for TikTok, I mean, I think we all can attest to how videos stay in your mind. And TikTok is a series of videos that they watch on repeat. And it can be extremely hard set in a child's brain what they intake on TikTok. And so you have to be careful that you're raising children that can ingest those things in context. And without these conversations, they're viewing those videos at fat without true information that may be damaging to what you want your child to believe or what you want your child to know. So avoiding conversations with children is just probably the most ignorant thing you can do, whether you are teaching or raising children, allowing them to gain information so that they're also academically elevated, but not socially ignorant. We don't want children who mm-hmm. are socially ignorant to the point that they can read on a 12th grade level in the second grade, but they have no idea of the difference between alternative facts or just
Absolutely.
Social construct and construct. We got to give them that foundation so that we're raising the future that we want to see.
You know, it's interesting.
Go
ahead, Gianni,
please. You may think mm-hmm. that you're protecting them, but you're not. You're really mm-hmm. not.
That I think that is so important. We could, argue that there have always been issues that politicians have with truth-telling or shading the truth or spinning the truth. But I think for young people, particularly children of a certain age, this may be the first president that they really have a salient idea of who he is. And mm-hmm. this is the first one. And as a result, mm-hmm. the first president for my daughter was Barack Obama, which mm-hmm. I think is a good thing. But for a lot of people, a lot of children, this is the first president that they were really cognizant of. And in dealing with issues of truth and history and race and the like, is going to be a continuing battle for parents, I think. So, I want to thank both of you. I want to thank both of you, Christina Wren and Gianni Clarkson, for having this great conversation. Great parents, and look, Christina, with your children abroad, I guess. Hey, look, dinner is real cheap right now, right? Just a couple of meals. Well, I hope that they get back home safely and in one piece.
All right. Thank you so much. And thanks for having me. I just wanted to say before I leave, I did attend and graduate from Howard University. So this is just super special to me. And I just would be a terrible alum if I did not mention that.
Well, definitely. HU, you know, shout out to you. And Gianni, thanks. Always good to talk to you, man.
Always good to talk to you. Humble. Thank you.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Friday, January 8th, 2021. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.